Stand by. Is this thing on?
Yes, Dan.
Oh, hello.
You're listening to Old News with Dan and Carrie.
This just in.
Breaking news to report.
We are live.
Old newscasters reunite.
Can we just say former?
Sure. Former newscasters reunite behind the mic after more than 20 years.
Old news is good news.
Stay tuned.
Our guest today is a wild one. At least he seems to be happiest in the wild. Today we are interviewing Bill Shirk, known as the man about the woods. Dan and I met Bill in the late 1990s when we all worked at WKOW-TV in Madison, Wisconsin. Bill has always been a true storyteller, whether through TV journalism or in recent years as a producer, writer, and host of various outdoor shows and podcasts. We are very excited to catch up with our old friend, Bill Shirk. Bill, welcome to Old News.
This is an absolute blast from the past. You look different. You look different. And I look different. What happened?
I know. Some of us have more hair. Some of us not so much, right?
20 some years happened, Bill. And, you know, you don't look that different other than you have a very large amount of facial hair now compared to back in the day.
You look like a man of the woods.
You do.
If I was there, I'd hug you guys.
Hey, you know, when I was out looking around for some information on you, because it's been 20 some years and I knew you were very busy up there in Minnesota and doing a lot of work up there in Minnesota, I was looking up Bill Shirk, and then I pulled up another Bill Shirk, who is apparently, the old car detective. And I was like, I didn't know Bill was into old cars.
Right.
And then I realized he didn't have a C in his name like you do. So you've probably been into that before.
My doppelganger.
I've written down the same thing. And there's another Bill Shirk who is an escape artist and radio personality out there. So there are many of you, but none with your spelling, S-H-E-R-C-K, right?
Well, when you're in the television business, yeah, you are kind of an escape artist. 9 months here, disappear. 9 months there, disappear.
And is that your life, Bill? Is that what it's like? Are you traveling a lot? Are you moving around a lot?
So when I was in television news with you guys, yes, that was our life, right? You were living contract to contract. And in the television news game, you start with Alpena, Michigan, which, at least back in the day, used to be the smallest market in the country.
Really?
I don't know what the number was, like 219.
That your first market?
No, it was not, thank goodness. Because you want to climb the ladder.
Right.
And for so many, it was get to a top 10. And I wasn't so worried about top 10, but I wanted a great storytelling market, which back in the 90s and early 2000s was either Seattle, Denver, or Minneapolis, really.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so that was sort of my goal.
And you got to Minneapolis.
I got to Minneapolis. It was, you know, not a straight shot to get there. But, you know, it's funny how we all bounce around, right? I was a St. Norbert kid playing soccer in college up in Green Bay. And our senior season ended, and was kind of a weird year. At the time, I was dating a girl. Don't worry, my wife Katie won't. She knows the story. And she was in France.
So.
She was studying in France at that time. So here I was at college, senior year, done with sports, you know, girlfriend's not around. So I took a job at the local TV station in Green Bay as a intern. And, you know,
what station were you at, Bill?
I was at you're going to test me here. Not WFRV. It used to be the NBC, and now it's the Fox up there.
Yeah. WJLK.
Or WLUK.
WLUK.
That's what it was.
Yep.
And you know, it was funny. When I took the internship, they wanted interns filing papers and cleaning news cars. And I told the executive producer, like, I'm out. Not what I want to do. I want to learn the business. So I was lucky enough to work weeknights with a guy by the name of Wally Griffiths, whose dad was iconic in Cleveland radio. And I think last check, Wally was a national producer for one of the national news shows, but Dan Mixer was the photojournalist, and those two worked together every day, and they taught me the news business and how to communicate with people, how to have a soul in that. And I really fell in love with it because of those two guys. And that started
and that's where hopping. Your storytelling really started, because that was one of my questions as well. Because you were known as a storyteller when we were all at WKOW. And that's why I feel like you and our chief photographer, Greg Sheevy, and when you worked with Sandy, it's like you all know how to really use natural sound and use the pictures to tell the story, not just your voice, not just the interview voice, to use all these pieces to really move the story forward. Is that where it started when you were an intern?
No, I had no idea what I was doing. I can remember.
At least you're honest, Bill.
Yeah. I still some days, don't know what I'm doing, but it was funny. One of the very first stories I covered, there was a fire in the town of, I think it was Oconto, at a bar called the Yankamin Tavern. And we show up after dark in this two-story old school Wisconsin bar's on fire. And there are like 20 firefighters fighting this fire. Meanwhile, there are probably 200 other firefighters standing around in their gear watching. And here I am in my little camel tweed Sears coat and the fire, as you can see behind. I didn't even understand the point. The Yankamin Tavern was hosting the Wisconsin annual Fireman's Fish Fry that night, and the place was burning to the ground.
Oh, my gosh.
And you thought they were all just there as backups, right?
Right. I had no idea. And you obviously, over time, as you get better, learn to recognize what a real story is. But yeah. It's like we've got lifetimes of those types of stories, and that set me on a path wanting to understand what a story was, working with those guys as an intern, understanding that you could somehow be in the news business and not be a dirty news hound, because and that eventually probably washed me out of the television news business, because once I finally was back in Minneapolis, was doing some long format stories, but really day in and day out, we were covering a lot of stories that I didn't really want to be a part of.
Mm. Yeah, they can suck the life out of you, can't they?
It's unbelievable. So I was an intern in Green Bay, graduated from college, spent the summer in Europe traveling, came home, decided I needed a news job. So I started sending out resume tapes, and La Crosse called. So I put on my Sears suit and I drove down to La Crosse. And
wait a minute, tell people what Sears is, Bill.
A very inexpensive resource for suits if you're going to be on television.
Right.
When you're making no money when you start in television.
And 5 minutes into the interview, I realized this guy has no intention of ever giving me a job in the business. So I asked this guy, what's the deal? Huh. Well, I can give young people like you some advice and maybe steer you into another career direction.
Really?
And I left that interview pretty deflated.
Huh.
But 3 weeks later, I had a full-time reporting gig in Duluth at the ABC affiliate up there, thanks to news director Steve Goodspeed, who was a mentor. He is still in charge up there.
Wow.
And,
incredible.
That started me on the path. And 9 months later, Madison called and they wanted to double my salary from $13,000 a year.
Woo!
I had to go into the theme. We were talking with people, everybody kept throwing out 12,000, 12,000. So you were a little ahead of the curve with 13. Then you got to double it.
My 14-year-old has a summer gig working in the greenhouse behind our place, and he makes like three times as much as I was.
It was 30 years ago though.
Yeah. We weren't driven by money. We were driven by the whole storytelling thing. For me, it's never been about being on television. I kind of get in trouble because I make fun of that stuff too much. Television makes people weird. Right. But I jumped then from Duluth to Madison, where I spent 3 years, and you know, I realized at that point something big was going to have to happen if I was going to continue in the business. I didn't want to just hop around in medium-sized markets. So about the time I left you guys, there was this thing out there called Fox News that was getting started.
Right?
And they needed top reporters at their owned and operated stations. They didn't have bureaus. They didn't have a network at that point. They were starting from scratch. So I got hired to report local news out of an O&O station in North Carolina. High Point, as they call it. High Point.
High Point.
And when national type stories would happen, there was a pool of us and they would grab us and we would be kind of the national reporters for Fox News.
Did you ever cover campaigns then for Fox News?
Did a little bit of that. There was a guy, what was his name? Cameron Smith. Okay. I can just remember jockeying with Cameron on political type stories because I did a little bit of political work in Madison, which was a great learning experience for me. But
I remember that. That's why I was wondering.
You've probably seen those bumper stickers that say, "I ain't no Tony Galley."
Are there really? Are there really those bumper stickers?
Oh, we'll make one.
Yeah. But, I was going to say, our first old news merch right there.
Yeah. So Tony Galley is a long timer in the Madison market, right? Knows everyone, knows how to cover every story. And he was a mentor and I couldn't cover politics like those people could. So when I went to Fox News, because DC was so close, every once in a while, those stories, but I was a little more of the guy going out into the hurricane, chasing NASCAR drivers, wildfires in the Blue Ridge Mountains. And
yeah, you were the adventure guy. I kind of remember that too, even in Madison. I think you were the guy, tell me if I'm wrong on this, you always had some creative stand-ups, and I think part of it was because of what you said before. You like to poke a little bit of fun of being on camera, and you were the guy, I think, who fried an egg on the sidewalk or on the hood of a car or something. Did you do that? I think you did that in Milwaukee or in Madison, didn't you?
We might have done that, but we decided to flip that whole idea on its head, because there are things that reporters in the television industry do in every market on planet Earth.
And kind of a cliche,
totally
right?
Cheesy, yeah. Right? So in right. Phoenix, when it's 1:15, somebody goes out for their afternoon live shot and cracks an egg on the sidewalk. It's so hot.
Right.
So we had like 25 or 27 below.
That's so what it was.
We decided to do the opposite. So we froze a bunch of stuff. So we were playing golf with cherry tomatoes and doing all kinds of stuff with frozen foods that were so hard from the cold. And I thought it'd be a great punchline where we had this new satellite truck, you know, these massive trucks that weigh whatever, 300
They're obsolete tons. Now.
Right. And I thought, how funny would it be to put a frozen banana under the tire of the truck? Because at that point of the story, everyone's like, oh my gosh. And of course, the truck drove over the banana and it splatted. And that was the end of our story. Kind of funny. Like, what'd you expect? So, yeah, we just always tried to be a little bit different with stories. But, you know, even now, my sole drive is to steer emotion. I want people to watch stories and feel something.
Mm-hmm.
And that really became the driving force in what I wanted to do. And that's probably why I left television news. Actually was forced out, but it was the best thing that happened to me. Mm. I wanted people to feel something. Everything we do is really about people. And right. We've been sitting around telling stories for a long, long time. I think it started with a campfire and a couple of cavemen, you know, and that never changes. And that's why there will always be stories for us to share.
Did you go from Carolina then to Minneapolis, or what was your
journey? Yeah. And obviously working on the East Coast with the Fox stuff, we had contracts and I was under a 3-year contract and I had a handshake out for Minneapolis.
Oh.
And the guy who left as news director in North Carolina went to Minneapolis as a news director, Scott Libin, great mentor of mine. And I knew, or I felt in my heart, that someday Scott Libin was going to call. And he called. But the good news, I got to my contract 3 months later, and Scott Libin called again, and I went home to Minneapolis.
Happy ending. Are you from the Minneapolis area?
I'm originally from Canada.
Yeah, you're a Canuck.
Which is like
the car guy with your name.
Which is kind of funny because my Christmas gift, HP sauce. Have you ever heard of HP?
Never.
No, what is that?
So when I was a little kid, the family moved down from outside Toronto and we lived in Minnesota. And there were certain things you could not get in the United States. HP, House of Parliament steak sauce, is a Canadian pastime. And so whenever we travel, these bottles of HP show up on my desk as gifts. So just got those.
So for folks who aren't watching this, they're listening, Bill was holding up a bottle of HP sauce. And just looking at it makes me want to have a steak, Bill.
It's a moose steak, right?
A moose steak.
And I like that it just happens to be sitting in your office or den right next to the computer, just in case you need to.
Just got them. Yeah, I'm in my work office, which is in our facility here, but we'll get to where that all is later on, I suppose. But But Minneapolis, yes, was home. You know, this is where I grew up. And
so, and what station was it at in Minneapolis that you were at with?
So I went to the ABC affiliate, Channel 5, KSTP.
KSTP.
And at the time, they were picking off. There's a pattern in the business now where these local owners are picking off the smaller stations, so they'll have two entities in one market. So KSTP, which is the ABC affiliate, and then they had this small station called KSTC, which was an independent. So news on both, and some time to do longer format stories. So I was doing a lot of that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
really loved it.
Which I mean, if folks never got to see your stuff down here in the Madison area, which it was a few years ago, you really did excel at telling great stories. So from there, then did you go to Minnesota Bound?
Yeah, so I spent 3 years reporting news here, again doing some long format stories. Had some really special projects that were kind of dear to my heart. You know, at one point, the Minnesota Twins, they were talking about contracting them out of Major League Baseball. So I was able to do a team shoot with, I think we had 15 photojournalists.
Oh, my gosh.
On opening day, go out and spend 24 hours documenting the first day of the Twins season because we thought it might be the last. And having whatever it was, 72 hours with John Minnell, who was an editor, he's the guy who now edits American Idol and all those shows, but putting together a special story on what at the time looked like it was going to be the last opening day. That was magical. The Minnesota Wild, our hockey team in the NHL.
Yep.
We did the same thing for their very first home game. And I still am moved every time I watch that final piece. And we did that one without any voice track. That was like a 5.5 minute, what we call in the business, a natural sound piece, just documenting Minnesota getting its hockey team back.
Oh, I love those kind of, remember the old 48 hours where like back then it was just all video and sound and sound bites, man, those were awesome.
And it was because of markets like Madison and people like Greg Sheevy who let me fail a lot on a daily basis.
Greg strives to do that with everyone.
I'm embarrassed by many of the stories I put on the air there because I was trying techniques. I was trying different forms of writing. I was learning and didn't really even know it at the time, but I had people like that believed and gave us the flexibility, and you know, that's the reason I became a storyteller. It's people like that.
But that's just the learning process. No one starts at the top when you start something new, you know. any industry, you learn, hey, you grow.
I had that Sears suit and I looked good. I was at the top.
You were there for your handsomeness.
But, you know, it's an amazing industry. And for a decade, I covered every story you can imagine in every place, learned some really incredible lessons. I can remember being in the Blue Ridge Mountains. We had gotten a call that a FedEx plane had gone down. And maybe you guys even remember the story. A FedEx plane crashed maybe in Memphis, killing the crew of five. And we had learned that one of the pilots lived up in the Blue Ridge Mountains. And so we drove up into the middle of nowhere, found the house, and I took a walk up the driveway alone. It was a long driveway. And a gentleman came out and met me. And as I remember, it was, I don't know, a brother of the wife, something like that. And I introduced myself and I said, I just can't believe I'm here. He said, get it. We're all trying to wrap our arms around this. Can you give us like an hour to figure out what's going on? And then somebody will talk to you. That's no problem. Obviously those are terribly uncomfortable conversations to have day in and day out, right? That felt like the DNA of news to me. And I started to turn around and this reporter came running up the driveway. She was probably, you know, I'm 6 feet two. She was probably 6 foot four, 6 foot five, just this amazing blue dress, all dolled up, carrying a microphone, and said something to the guy about, hey, I need an interview. And he kind of said the same thing, like, we need some time, you know, we're trying to figure. And she blew her gasket. And I remember her turning around, stomping her foot, saying, what am I supposed to do? I'm the lead of the newscast. And right, you step back from those moments because we're the professionals in that industry. And you step back and look at that moment in time. And it just changes your perspective about what we are doing, who we are as people, and for me personally, what my goals were, why I wanted to be a part of this. Right. And that is eventually what led me away from television news and into the sorts of shows we're doing now. Because I tell people, when we show up now with a camera, people are so excited to see us. Where for a decade, it was the other side of the coin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I want to get to that in a bit, but I just want to kind of touch on this topic a little bit, because that's one of the hardest things about any kind of journalism, I think, is you are in people's lives at some of the worst moments of their lives.
Yep.
And to bring your humanity with you and to have some grace and to have some patience is very hard to do. So I commend you on being able to do that. And I think, it's those people who are like that other reporter that give journalism sometimes a bad name. And I understand sometimes it has to be pushed that way, clearly. I mean, sometimes you have to push.
Sure.
But situations like that is really hard to do. And I mean, did you ever have stories like that you regretted acting in a way that you weren't proud of when you were in the news business?
No.
Or did you just never, you stuck to your integrity?
We lied at times to the news business about knocking on doors. I mean, we never flat out lied, but there were times where I would not go to a front porch. Mm. I would drive into a driveway with a photographer and sit for 10 minutes. And if nobody came out to see us, we would politely drive away, because there were some situations that were so sensitive as a person.
Yeah.
I made the call to say, I'm not willing to do that today. That was very rare.
I was going to say that has to be rare.
But those weren't moments for me that dictated whether we were able to gather a story that day or not. They were just elements that for me personally, I wasn't going to include. I can remember towards the end of my tenure here in Minneapolis with KSTP, there was an elderly couple murdered on Christmas Eve up in Brainerd, Minnesota, which is where our cabin is. Remember pagers, Motorolas?
Christmas
morning, sitting in front of the tree with my parents, and the pager goes off. I need to get up there to talk to that murdered couple's family. And I said, okay, we've got a job to do. So on Christmas, we drove the 3 hours north and found the neighborhood and tracked down the house. And I remember the photographer saying, not happening. If you want something on camera, you get them to talk to you and you bring them out to the street. I'll be here at the car. And that was his way of voicing that he kind of had enough. Like, this stuff sometimes just goes too far. Right. And that actually would end up being one of the very last television news stories I reported, because also in Brainerd at the time, it was 25 below zero and there was a lake up there that would not freeze over. So there was all this talk. Is it aliens? Is it, you know, a geyser underneath? And there's a volcano. We cover that story. And a day later I drove home, and at that time, even in the early 2000s, your cell phone didn't work everywhere. You kind of get back into your home territory. And I crossed over on the interstate and my phone just started lighting up with messages. And by the time I got to the third voicemail, I realized that I was probably out of a job at that point. You know, Channel 5 had gone through two or three rounds of layoffs and there was nobody left. And finally I got the axe, and that was the end of news for me. And actually at that point, I thought that was the end of television storytelling too. I was done.
It was just the beginning. Is that when you went to, is it Ron Shera? Is that, am I saying that correctly?
Yep. Ron Shera Productions. It was a really weird time. You know, the station, they had like work meetings for the people who were laid off. And I'm sitting in this office listening to state work counselors talk about going to nursing school and welding academies. And you're sitting in that room with people who you work with, but they're kind of strangers to you, because newsrooms in big markets are big places with lots of people. And I'm just looking around like, what is happening? And there was a photographer, young photographer, Aaron Ochtenberg, who I worked with, and his phone rang. And he stepped out of the meeting and then he came back in. He kind of gave me a look, grabbed his stuff, and he left. And that was Ron Shera Productions calling him to give him a job.
Word had gotten out.
Word had gotten out. I did not go that path. I was looking at doing marketing and PR, and it was just, all of it was just really uninteresting to me, and I wasn't passionate about it. So remember the show World News Tonight?
Yeah.
Oh, of course.
So I was freelancing with World News Tonight. But at that point, I didn't care about the stories that much anymore. I was over that business. And it was my dad who said, you know what? You and Ron Shera are exactly alike. You write stories, you fish, you hunt, you camp, you should write him a letter. And, you know, I kind of looked at dad and said, well, I'm not going to write him a letter.
Sometimes dads are great at advice, though.
And I wrote a letter.
There you go.
And there you go.
And there you go. He actually refused to hire me full time. He said he couldn't afford me. So I was doing a little bit of script writing. I was doing the World News Tonight thing. And I was walking out of the Ron Shera Productions office one day with this photographer I mentioned earlier, Aaron Ochtenberg, and my phone rang. Okay, sounds good. Yep, Monday. Great. See you then, babe. And I hung up and he looked at me and said, what? And he knew right away who it was. There's another great outdoor personality, a guy by the name of Babe Winkleman.
Oh, Babe Winkleman. I remember Babe Winkleman.
Sure. And Babe Winkleman was trying to hire me.
Oh.
And that was a Friday afternoon, probably 5 o'clock, and about 8:30, I got a call from Ron Sherrod Productions, and that's how it started.
Oh my goodness.
It's called leverage.
Yeah, really.
And I still get the question all the time. Was that really Babe? Did Babe really call you? And yeah, he did. Huh. But it was a great choice, and Ron's been a great mentor, and 20 some years later, here we are.
And for people who have not seen Ron's program, he has Minnesota Bound that runs on Care 11, right? And it's also on the internet.
Hey, Carrie, it's my program.
Oh, excuse me. Didn't it start as his?
That's a joke. All right. So here's how it starts. So Ron Sherrod is a longtime outdoor news writer here in Minnesota. And he is iconic.
Yep.
And back in the day, he tried to start a television show. And essentially got his butt handed to him and went bankrupt. And the NBC affiliate here in town, Care 11, which is used to be one of the top storytelling stations in the entire country. Everyone wanted to be a Care. Care came to Ron and said, "What's it going to take for you to do a television show?" And he said, "Well, I kind of been down that path and it didn't go so well." And they said, "Well, what's it going to take?" He said, "Well, I like content, but I don't like sales." So they said, "You give us content and we'll do the show." And that was the start of Minnesota Bound in about 1996.
Okay.
And the show instantly became iconic here. It's been almost 3-4 years ago, I guess. We celebrated 1,000 episodes, which in television doesn't happen very often.
Crazy.
So shows like Cheers, Oprah Winfrey, those are shows with long runs. MASH and Minnesota Bound joined that. I came on board and we did a count as we were working on our 1,000th episode. I've worked on 14 different outdoor television shows since starting with Ron Sherrod Productions.
Really?
So we have both legacy shows that stay forever and some that come and go. And that's just the nature of what we do. But they're all based around storytelling.
And they're all outdoor type shows as well, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yep. And you know, the stories I tell are good stories. You know, the show airs at 10:30 on Sunday night, which you think, oh my gosh, everyone's asleep at that point. No, actually, the 10 o'clock news plays and then everyone watches Minnesota Bound, because after the negative, we are the positive and we put the people feeling good and getting ready for their week.
Hmm.
Well, and it marries, you know, it marries that feel good with activities and people, you know, activities for sure that people up in that area like to do, and people here,
yes,
in you know, hunting, yes, fishing, all of that kind of thing. And you are a person who does all of that too. So your passion probably flows through all of that as well. And, you know, how lucky is that to be able to marry something you have a passion for with, you know, storytelling?
It's a great word, luck. It's all luck. For everything I did in the television business, I had no clue where I was headed. And a letter made all the difference.
Well, but you kept pointing yourself in the right direction just by the choices you made. And even though it may have not aligned with every station you were at along the way, it led you to the people you ultimately wanted to be with.
I think so.
Go ahead.
It's given us a platform. And what we have realized is, if you tell a good story, people will watch. But you have to move people. You really do.
Like you said before, the emotion, the feeling. I mean, people have to be connected to that for sure. One of the other things luck is always part of, sometimes you have to have a little luck. Obviously, you pointed yourself in the right direction too. But you also have mentioned this a number of times during this whole conversation, Bill, is mentor. You've said mentor probably 5 or 6 times.
Yeah.
And I think that's also a huge part of probably any industry, any business, but especially in a journalism-based and journalism-adjacent type of careers, having a mentor or mentors is huge. And it sounds like you've had quite a few of them.
And the messages to me have been very clear. Steve Goodspeed in Duluth after my very first live shot. I remember feeling like I was going to barf. And we, a little thing you plug into your ear, which called an IFB. I remember we were doing back-to-back live shots, and I was going to have to pass that off to another reporter. And, oh, my gosh, it's never going to work out. And I was so nervous, and the live shot was terrible. You know, I was young. But back in Steve's office, the news director's office that night, he said, don't take that for granted. You're going to get to the point where you're working on live shots and you're working on news stories, and the only thing you're thinking about is where you're going out for a beer after work and with which friend. Don't take this stuff for granted. Every single time you show up with a TV camera, perceived a reality to the people you're around, it's one of the biggest days of their lives. Don't ever take that for granted. And that stuck.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, and it's funny how you do remember the names of those people who were mentors and people who had that impact on your life. You know, as you're talking, I'm thinking to myself, I remember when I first started as a one-man band, they called it at the time, back in the UP. You were in Duluth. I was in Escanaba.
Escanaba.
Yeah, right. But I worked for the WFRV out of Green Bay. And they basically just gave me 3/4-inch gear and a car and said, go ahead, go shoot, go create news stories in the Upper Peninsula of Minnesota or of Michigan. But I remember a guy named Mark Wadium. Mark Wadium was a photographer at WFRV, and he was one of the only guys there who had the time or took the time to actually show me how to shoot. And you remember those people along the way, right? And boy, without people like that, and then you have to turn it around. And I'm sure you've done that for other people too, Bill. Master tape there, WLUK.
3/4-inch gear. If people are watching, I'm holding up a tape that's about the size of a Webster dictionary. This is what we used to shoot on. There it is.
I have one too. Yeah.
Yours is vanishing with the background.
My first two resume tapes are on 3/4-inch gear. And
that's crazy.
But yep. When you talk about a one-man band, that means one person is doing everything. You're documenting the story with a camera. That's not even a camera. It's a suitcase that hangs over your shoulder.
Right.
With an umbilical cord that's the size of a high-tension power line to a camera, which, depending on what you use, back in the day, they were called Ikigamis.
I had an Ikigami. Yep, that's what I used.
And the joke was you could pound nails with an Ikigami camera. And that's how we learned. I can remember being in Green Bay, taking an Ikigami out. And one of the first things I did in the parking lot is I pointed that thing at the sun, and the viewfinder made all these cool colors. And I went, wow, that's neat. Not realizing that it was a tube camera. And I had just burned out the, whatever, three tubes at $129 a piece. And
there goes 6 months' salary, right?
I told you. I knew nothing.
Oh, how different is it today, though? I mean, when you think, I mean, you don't have to shoot anymore, do you, Bill?
I don't.
Yeah,
I don't. And I never did. I learned how to run a camera, but it still baffles me how good the photojournalists I work with are. I just never learned that. What I did learn to do is edit. And in Madison, where we all were together, we had the country's first computer editing system. I would do the 10 o'clock news. You guys may or may not know this about me. And after the newscast, I didn't go home. I would take that story and I would go into an edit bay. And I would sit and I would rework it with the sounds and the pictures the way I had it in my knucklehead. And that's how I learned kind of editing and sound and all that stuff. And literally I would walk out and the sun would be up and I'd go home for a couple hours and then I'd come back to work. And I did that for a long time, trying to figure out how pictures and sounds and words all fit together. And again, the amount of grace I was given in Madison at WKOW is just amazing, because I was not a great storyteller. I was trying like the Dickens, but thank goodness for people like Greg Sheevy and Andrew Bohag and Dan Presser and all these people who kind of led the way and taught me how to write.
Thanks for including us in that. But, you know, and I can vouch for that. I can remember coming in to do the morning show a couple of times, and you would still be there. Darren Lynn would be there sometimes.
Darren Lynn.
Yeah, those names pop into your head, right? And you guys would still be there in an edit bay messing around with stuff. And, you know, that's how you really get better at something, right?
Well, and now you're writing, producing, hosting. Can you kind of jump into what you're doing on a daily, weekly, monthly basis?
So right now we have 7 different shows that we produce.
Is that all?
Is that all? It's kind of funny because you go out and people say, oh, is this your slow season? And you go, yeah, there is no such thing. Yeah. You know, we've got all these outdoor shows. We do a national bird hunting show, upland show called The Flush. And who knew that that audience was so passionate? The Flush and the following of people who hunt pheasants and grouse and all these birds that exist out there. That is an amazing show.
That airs
on the Outdoor Channel 3rd and 4th quarters every year. So that program we have to shoot 1 year ahead of time, because during the bird hunting season, we're already in the reruns for that season. So we're documenting that stuff a year ahead. there's another I host called Made for the Outdoors. I always had this vision, a fishing rod. It's not like a spoon in your kitchen drawer, a tent, a backpack, your favorite old hiking boots. They're things that create these incredible memories. So if we could go to the places where this stuff comes to life, see the production and meet the people who do the work and get to understand them, I always thought that would be a great show. And turned out it was a pretty good project. So Made for the Outdoors is another favorite. And, you know,
so are you producing that? Are you the producer? What's your role in all of that?
So for Made for the Outdoors, when that show started, yep, I was the guy coming up with the 13 episodes. And as a crew, we'd sit around and figure out, you know, where we were going, what products we wanted to highlight. But, you know, managing the day-to-day, making sure the travel was done, and is this script written? Has the video been logged? Yeah, all that stuff. And I've been able to pass some of that along, because you can't do it all.
Right.
At one point, I was hosting, well, here, I'm going to give away a secret. Way back in the day, all these tapes, right?
Yeah.
These things. We have shelves, like an office building full of tapes. And I remember looking at it with Ron going, my gosh, we put so many resources into these stories, and they run for 4 minutes. Now they're sitting on a tape on a shelf. What a waste. So we stole an idea. We started regifting. So some of our content we will take, like our Minnesota Bound show, we will take the stories from that show with different hosts in a different market. So in Wisconsin, Due North Outdoors is widely Minnesota Bound.
One year later.
It is,
and that's not cheating. That is just reoffering to a different audience. So we've, as a company, have been pretty efficient in doing that and using our content across our different shows. As an example, I went to the Arctic Circle in northern Finland. Everyone who fishes has what's called a Rapala fillet knife, which is made by a little company, Martini, up in Rovaniemi. Do you guys know what Rovaniemi is famous for?
Nope.
Ever heard of Santa Claus? That,
yes, I have.
That Rovaniemi is his hometown.
Ooh.
Did I mean,
Santa.
Look it up on Google. Look up Rovaniemi.
Oh, I thought he lived in the north, on the North Pole.
Look it up.
All
so,
right, I believe you.
A week before Christmas, I got to go to Rovaniemi, Finland, in the Arctic Circle, which is a town like you have never seen.
How so?
Reindeer walking in the streets, and 10 feet of snow, and Christmas 365 days a year. It is unbelievable. And they make martini knives there. And so I go document that story for Made for the Outdoors. Meanwhile, I can take that content and rework it for Minnesota Bound, because everyone who watches our show has a Rapala fillet knife in their family somewhere, and now they understand where that knife came from. So we're efficient with our content.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And so that's why we're working on so many different shows at the same point. But we have a podcast company. We do a little bit of corporate work. We do some commercial work outside of the television shows. Old school television is dying, right? There's this thing called the World Wide Web and the internet. And so we're trying to stay very diverse with our storytelling, and we hope that's going to keep us in business for a long, long time.
I was listening to you doing your podcast while I was cleaning out my dining room hutch, and I tuned into the Minnesota Bound Stories Behind the Stories, and I was listening to the one about crapola.
Ah, yes, with Brian. Yes.
The granola company. I thought that was great. I'm like, that's a great idea for next year's Christmas gift. Send everybody crapola.
Yes, it's amazing. Crapola, by the way, Ely, which is our little Northwoods town up on the edge of the Boundary Waters. Brian and his wife, Andrea, they were having a party a few years ago. They had a few too many cocktails, and Brian, half-cocked, said, "You mix cranberries with apples and you make granola and it'd be called crapola." Ha 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 ha. They go out and get a patent or a copyright on it. Don't think anything of it, but eventually a letter comes in the mail saying, "Hey, unless you do something with this, you know, in 90 days, this thing goes away." And they went, "Oh shoot, we better start making granola." So they started this company called Crapola. And now they ship this stuff all over the place.
Dang. You know, I have a lot of dumb ideas that I could patent.
I know. And it's just, but again, that's not a story about granola. That is a story about people.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They are amazing people with the driest, funniest senses of humor. And, you know, it just, those are the stories, and they are everywhere.
What's the project you're working on now? Like, do you have a project you're really buried into right now?
So Minnesota Bound, which is our weekly show, that's 52 weeks a year. And I produce that show. That is the one story that I still produce.
Okay.
So coming up with all the stories. I do much of the reporting for that. I host it with Ron's daughter, Laura Shara.
Yep.
So that's kind of my core. And truth be told, that's enough.
Yeah,
but
sounds like it,
you know, but I also, you know, am still a host of The Flush, our bird hunting show. Mm-hmm. So next week, you know, Monday morning, I'll fly down to Greensboro, North Carolina, which I'm kind of looking forward to because that's my old neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to bird hunt with a guy who raced in the Tour de France and is now a full-time bird hunting guide and dog trainer. So we're going to tell his story. There's no pattern to our season. We don't have it all figured out. We've got ATV off-road shows that we do, Made for the Outdoors, Minnesota Bound. So it's just kind of like, okay, I get home Thursday afternoon, I need to record my podcast. And then Friday, we're ice fishing for Minnesota Bound. You know, it's a little bit of chaos, but it's controlled. And we are so lucky to have what we have, because a lot of small television production companies, it's a hard gig.
Yeah.
But we're lucky. We're doing well. So the project is just never ending. It's perpetual, right? Mm-hmm. We're like Old Country Buffet. Just put out another bucket of chicken and another peach cobbler. And
I was looking at the long list of the podcasts. There's so many that you offer in your company.
Yeah. So we realized we needed to be diverse, and our CEO, Ron doesn't own the company anymore. Our CEO is a guy by the name of Scott Franz, and Scott actually is a longtime bird hunter, and through Pheasants Forever, which is a conservation organization, he won an opportunity to go fishing with me. Hmm. And so we were out on the river drifting in the boat, and one thing led to another, and pretty soon he bought the company. But it was magical because Scott, his father, was a longtime media icon in the Minneapolis market. Scott was into radio sales, and he and his business partner had another business downtown called City Lights, and they did all the advertising in our Skyway system.
Okay.
All the buildings in Minneapolis and St. Paul are connected by these above ground walkways so people don't have to go out and get cold. Which
is particularly nice right now when it's below zero.
Yeah.
Brutal. But
they had all the real estate and all the advertising. So he loves the outdoors. He's a conservationist, but he knows sales. So we know how to have longtime partners, and sales is what keeps you in business.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Without sales, it's hard to make money.
Yeah. Yes. And right, we've watched a lot of production companies come and go, and it's a hard, hard thing. And we're just really appreciative to Scott, and we have a sales team of just wonderful people, and that's how we stay in business.
And when you're not working all the time, you have teenagers and you're a hockey coach, right? What are some of the things you do when you're not at work?
Well, first off, I have a incredible partner, right? Mm-hmm. Which Katie and I, so it's a podcast, I can digress.
Yes.
Remember, I told you about the layoffs in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
So we went through a round of layoffs, and I got demoted. I had to work weekends because there was nobody left. And my first assignment was to cover Vikings tailgaters. Hmm. So you lose all your workmates, you get demoted. Now I have to work weekends. I'm working Sunday, and I have to go Sunday morning and hang out with a bunch of drunks. My career's going backwards. Well, one of those tailgaters happened to be this real cute blonde, and I did the live shots, and the news truck was driving out, and I told the guy driving, I'm like, oh, wait, time out. Stopped at the gate, went back into the tailgating lot, found Katie, was ready to give her a card, and she handed me a business card that she had already filled out.
And there was a love connection instantly.
I still have that card at home, and that was the start of that. And
your meet cute.
Yep. So layoffs can be a positive thing, is the whole point of that story. But yeah, Katie and I are married. We have two amazing boys, Bennett and Brady.
I have a Brady. They're
13 and 15, and they're prime time, right? Mm-hmm. I coach a lot of hockey. I coach a lot of soccer. We spend a lot of time outdoors. We're a skiing family. We hunt. We fish. Katie's not so much into that stuff. She goes along for the fun of the travel.
She goes to the tailgate.
She goes to the tailgate.
She sits in the lodge when you're skiing and has a few warm drinks, right?
She loves that.
Yeah.
You know, she'll run, she'll come out and ski the slopes for a little bit. And it's funny because you'll hear her. She'll go, it's a chilly one. And I go, okay, that means she's done. She's not going to go back up with us.
Yeah, I understand. So you have built this life now around being in the outdoors with mm-hmm. your family, with your work. What does the outdoors do for you as a person?
Can't ask questions like that. it's where I like to be. I was a kid And there's something about this connection to Canada. My grandfather had a cabin on a river, the Ottawa River, a logging town called Fort Calonge or Fort Calonge. Mm-hmm. And the stories from before I was around, flying his float plane from Ohio up there, and my dad and the Jeep back in the bush and their adventures. It was all happening before I was even around, right? And my dad passed that on to me. And so now I'm doing the same with the boys, you know. COVID, have you guys ever heard of that? It was a thing.
Could we talk about that for a while?
Yeah. A lot of people discovered the outdoors during that time.
We're going to talk about it. So when COVID hit, remember, it was like a wall. Just one day, everything shut down. Oh, done. Yeah. Boom. Yeah. Okay. Shirk boys are now out of school. We live just west of the Twin Cities, kind of out on the prairie, and I have a little prairie project. And I've always been a winter camper. And so they took one of our winter tents, set it up back on the property, and during COVID, they stayed out 177 nights.
Oh, my goodness.
So that first window was in the spring, right? Kind of whatever it was, March, January or February-ish, somewhere in there, whatever it was. So all that spring, they stayed out there. And that starts to get into spring, summer. It's kind of warm at night. So that was done. In the fall, people go back to school, but then they cut school out again. So they set that tent back up and went all the way in through Christmas into January when things finally started to loosen. And
wow.
And so for us as a family, yes, what the outdoors can do. My kids didn't go stir crazy. They had their little place out there with the wood stove. So it's cutting wood. It's every morning, you know, you'd look and see if there was a wisp of smoke coming out of the chimney out there. And that's how we knew they were still alive. And and it was amazing. But that's what the outdoors does.
You should have been doing a story on that. Maybe you did. I don't know.
I know. That would have been everyone always says that. Everyone says, oh my gosh, that would have been the most incredible story.
It would.
You're right. And it was right there in front of my silly
right
face.
Right at my house. Yeah.
Ask you one thing. I usually like to ask people what their first job was, what their worst job was. But I want to know, is there a career path or part of your career, something you're still thirsting for in your career?
In the storytelling business, boy, I don't know.
You've done a lot already.
And I mean, that's a whole nother podcast talking about some of the characters and the stories. You know, I feel like when I get ready to retire, which maybe it's coming sooner versus later, you know, you pass the torch and let somebody else carry it. But, you know, I've been lucky enough to help mentor some young journalists who are doing well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if I can somehow help carry on that tradition, maybe that's the thing. What I really want to do is I want to have more time to coach and be in a community where I can offer some resources and help some kids grow and learn to be passionate and, it's not about winning and losing with me. It's about life and, you know, learning to be a team player and just love sports. And so that's kind of on my radar a little bit.
That sounds pretty great.
And maybe a ski patrol. There may be a ski patrol out there with a spot for.
Oh, that sounds good for you. That sounds really good.
Red, gray, bearded schmuck.
That sounds perfect. And my question that I like to ask, because I always loved watching TV bloopers and practical jokes growing up, do you have bloopers that you just still kind of laugh about years later, things that went wrong on air that you're like, oh, if only I could take that back?
Yes and no. Going back to, I never took television too seriously. Things go wrong and television, like every other aspect of life. Mm-hmm. So I didn't picture them so much as bloopers as, yeah, did you see that? That just happened, right? Like that's kind of my communication style. We used to do an annual Christmas tape here for our little company, which had some pretty amazing stuff, but we're too busy working. There's no time to put together an annual blooper tape because we just churned through so many stories, so much media, so many projects that we kind of left that in the dust. But yeah, I've been lucky enough, never had an open mic where I said something too silly, or I've tried to watch that a little bit because I've seen it impact other people. But I've been lucky in that regard. So I'm pretty sure over the next 6 months, things are just going to be awful. For me, now that you've asked that question, I'm gonna fall through the ice. I'm gonna fall, you know.
No, I'm sure
you're all will. Gonna be good. Yeah, yes. It's all gonna be good. Hey, Bill Shirk, it's been great to talk to you. It's been way too long, and hopefully, we can catch up again, do another podcast down the road, and talk to you about some of those great stories that you've done over the years and some of those interesting people, because you've probably got a whole head full of them.
When you guys called, it's just amazing, right? It's a business of people, and you guys were certainly a couple of favorites, and it's a magical business. It's an awful business, but it bonds people and creates memories, and yeah, wow. Oh, what a ride.
It was good to be in the broadcast foxhole with you, Bill.
It was a foxhole. It was a sweaty, wet, muddy, dirty foxhole. And it was great. But, you know, I couldn't do it with a family. I had to be young and single and free to move around. And, you know, it'd be a hard business to be in now.
Well, it got you to where you are now, and you seem to be in a real happy place. So it has been awesome catching up with you. Thank you for your time.
Thanks to both of you guys. I hope to see you sooner versus later. I'll be in the Wisconsin Dells in just hours.
Ooh.
For the Wisconsin Cheddar Cheese Classic, which is a big time hockey tournament.
Oh, very good. And good are luck. You coaching there?
You're coaching. I'll be coaching. Both boys are playing. We got lucky in. When you're a hockey family, if you can have a tournament in the same place at the same time, that is like winning gold. So we have to do this again, but we're going to turn the tables. I'll ask the questions.
All right.
And you guys have to give all the answers. How's that sound?
That sounds fun.
Yeah, that's the hard part.
Oh, really? Tell me about it.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see you, Bill. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks
to both of you. Great to catch up.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning in to Old News with Dan and Carrie.
That's old news for now.
Join us next time.